Welcome to Design Me a House. This is architect, author, designer Katie Hutchison. And with me is my co-host,
Dawn Oliveira, textile designer and educator.
Today on Design Me a House, this is episode 15. We have a featured guest. This is our third guest. And this is actually the last episode of season one. Yes. And our guest today is Rena Knight.
Hi, Rena.
Hey, Rena. Hi. So let me just tell you a little bit about Rena. Rena is an interior designer, fine artist, and an educator. She's the owner of Rena Studio, an art and design practice. She holds a bachelor's in science and an MFA in interior design from Endicott College, along with a certificate in drawing and painting from the RISD Continuing Education Program. She's an adjunct professor and teaches across the curriculum within the accredited interior design slash architecture programs at both Endicott College and previously at New England School of Design at Suffolk University. She also teaches both art and design courses within the continuing education program at RISD. As a creative professional rooted in both design and fine arts, she recognizes the close relationship between art, built environments, and human experience. Today's topic is color, by the way, did I fail to mention?
Yes.
And so we do also have some notes about that from Rena. This love of color informs her fine art practice too. She's an active member at numerous local collaboratives where her work gets shown regularly. She works with designers and architects for site-specific commissions for their clients. Her work has been juried in many shows and receives awards of merit and excellence and can be found in numerous private collections. Welcome, Rena.
Very exciting. Welcome.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Dawn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, so I think what we thought we might do, Rena, because there's a lot to color, we thought we might just start with some basic definitions. Yeah. So our listeners, as we're going along, if we kind of drop into some of these terms, they'll be reminded of what these mean. And I'm thinking, Dawn, maybe you're the one to go to for this.
Yeah, we can do that. So color is the general term used to describe every hue, tint, and tone or shade that we see. And some basic tools to use as a designer or artist for color, the color wheel. It's a circular diagram of the spectrum of colors used to show the relationships between the colors. So this shows the primaries, the tertiaries, the secondaries. And it's very helpful when you're trying to pitch color for something, whether it's a piece of art or a textile. What are complementary colors? Complementary colors are colors that appear opposite on the color wheel. So red being the opposite of green or orange being the opposite of blue. Complementary colors, they vibrate. What is hue? Hue is a color or shade of a color. One of the primary or secondary colors. It's not white, black, or gray. What is tone? Tone is a color with gray added to it. Tint is a color with white added to it. And shade is a pure color with black added to it. There are a couple of other terms like, well, we said complementary. Those are opposite colors on the color wheel. And analogous, which are colors that are near each other, next to each other on the color wheel. And this color wheel, as Rena will soon explain, is something that everyone uses, especially students learning design, just to learn about how to put colors together.
Can we tick off for the listener just what the primary colors are?
Sure. Primary colors, the three primary colors are red, blue, and yellow. And everything extends from there. Secondary colors after primary would be purple, yellow, and green.
Yes, so the primary colors, you have the triangle on the color wheel. And then if you mix two primary, that's how you get the secondary.
So that's what you call the secondary,
yeah. And the tertiary is when you take a secondary and you mix it with a primary color. Now, tertiary colors are the ones that are the most complex. They are the ones that say yellow, green. So they are the ones we actually go to more to create those nuanced colors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. That was a wonderful refresher and actually a learning experience as well. I don't think I've revisited the color wheel in 20 years. Exactly. No. So very good to have that. Rena, I think to launch for you, maybe you could get us started with kind of your take on color in kind of, a bigger picture realm, kind of the psychology of color, the symbolism, the cultural aspect of color.
Sure. Color is actually one of the most personal expression we can have in our own environments. So I'm talking in context of our homes. And it's so personal, and that's why it's such a thing that everybody is so attracted to. We all want to get a handle on it. And but color, a couple of things to keep in mind is color is always seen in a context. It's never only standalone. That's one thing. The other thing is that color should also be understood as chemistry, as physics, when it starts to interact, like color as light becomes very different. So in our homes, when we start to use, any of those kind of lighting starts to play a big role into that. And then color as perception and color as psychology, color used as symbolism, and also and lastly would be the personal expression of color that you find in a lot of the artworks. And so again, moving that into the color wheel that Don just mentioned, and was color wheels or color theories are just systems to understand color relationships. And the one that we mentioned with the tint, tone, and shade is the standard color wheel that we look at. We also look at the Munsell color theory that is often used in the design industry in interior design education. But there are other ones too. Like there is one by Goethe, which is also very interesting, where it's based on moods. And we can share an image of that.
Yeah. Let me just toss in here that people might wonder, where the heck did the color wheel come from? I read recently, it's from Sir Isaac Newton in 1666. Wow. That's how long it's been around.
Wow.
Who knew? Yeah. Color as human perception, wavelengths of light. He's a physicist, right?
Yes.
Makes sense.
Awesome.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just going off of that, that's why when we learn about color, we have to learn out all the aspects of color, you know? So that's why we have the color mixing classes too, because that's when you're taking the pigments and you're learning how these pigments are going to be.
Absolutely.
And it's fascinating to do that. And I highly recommend that as an exercise, as an ongoing creative thing for all of us to do, is to mix color. If you like a color, mix it. That's the one way to learn what the DNA of that color is, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, we did that for years before computers.
Yeah.
Mm. In textiles, in the industry, we mixed wash.
Sure.
That's how I learned how to mix color.
Let's get to one thing that I think is important, Rena, that you've mentioned in previous conversations, is about kind of different takes of different cultures and their attitude toward color.
Yes. That is another, we were talking a lot about all the different aspects of it. And if I can throw in a little reference, this brings to mind the color experience pyramid by Frank H. Mankey, who has also written really important books that we use in the interior design education. And based on that, he talks about that there is this there's a six-step pyramid here, and the bottom two are the collective unconscious, the biological reaction to a color stimulus as a sensation, and that these two things are innate in us. Hmm. And the rest of them are learned responses. And that's where, you know, we all have started to have a different take on it. And in those, we have personal relationships with color, influence of fashion, styles, and trends, cultural influences and colorisms, and conscious symbolism and association. Now, some of the examples, what these words mean, would be to take a look at, like, for the collective, subconscious kind of learning would be, this is cross-cultural, is the association of color red with blood. That is something that's universal.
Right. You
know? And then the learned part, we could say, like a conscious symbolism culturally would be the red, white, and blue.
Sure.
That's patriotic. That's Americana. But if you look at other cultures, they may have a different colors that may symbolize, patriotism to them.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you have the cultural influences where you have the white. Is purity in Western cultures. The brides will often wear white. Whereas in a lot of Asian cultures, white is seen as a color of mourning. And specifically, like, it's really seen as a is the opposite meaning of that.
Right. So, oh, fascinating.
Yeah. So as a designer, you know, you need to kind of having an understanding of this awareness, you know, is important. The other thing would also be that I would say the innate responses would be our connection of the color green with nature.
And sure.
Having that connection with nature, we all feel, restful, and it symbolizes growth and all of those things,
sure.
The blue for the sky. So those associations are the universal ones. So I would say that it is, if you have to understand color, it's like a never ending topic.
Sure, yeah.
There's so much to learn.
Maybe you could talk, Rina, a little bit about applications of color that are two-dimensional and three-dimensional, because today we're focusing on the home, which is a three-dimensional space.
Yes, Katie, that's a great question. And because I feel like my work as an artist and as a designer kind of like goes it from 2D into 3D. So in my mind, I see that big connection there. Let me couch it in a exercise that maybe everybody can also follow along. So this is an exercise that I offer to people anyone who wants to develop a color palette for their home or right. any place actually. So I pose them a question is, can five colors make a color palette? And people are often like, wow, you're just gonna like five colors? I can pick that and then do that. So I ask them to pick their favorite color. Once you pick a favorite color, see, you have to kind of, because when we are pulling palettes, it is in 2D form, right? It is we are pulling materials, we are laying a material board. In a way, I think of that as a 2D application, whether it's a painting or a materials board. So when you take, I'm taking you a step further back and by saying, forget about everything else, let's just focus on the color and the relationships of color. So you take a color pair that you love, then you go ahead and I say, think about what type of color relationships you're going to be creating. And that's something we were going to talk about a little bit later on. And Dawn actually covered into the color schemes, as we call in design.
And then they're choosing, your client or your student is choosing colors that work with that main color. So
yes.
Shades, tones, tints of colors that work with it, whether it's complementary or analogous, but colors that work with that main blue or that main red.
Yes.
Is that right?
I'm so glad you asked that, because yes, let's play along here, Don. So let's say you pick this beautiful, mint blue. So the first thing I will say is place it on the color wheel. You know, where does it really live? Because that gives you a understanding of what that color is made out of. Because not everything is just the primary. If I asked you that give me a red and I gave you 100 color chips of red, everybody will pick a slightly different type of color as what they think is the red. So that's why it's really important to kind of go and find where the color that we love lives on the color wheel, because that just unlocks the color relationships.
Now, do you actually do that with your clients? Do you actually show them the color wheel?
Yeah, color wheel is everywhere,
wow.
Even in my classes. I mean, it's like
it is everything, but I so rarely use it.
It's so funny that you say that, because I think of it also as an academic thing.
Yeah.
It's like okay, yeah, I remember the color wheel. It's not like
right.
I have one around.
I know.
Because you probably have it memorized and all those relationships
yeah.
by now.
By now we know which colors work with each other.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you get a shorthand of your kind of go-to mm-hmm. colors.
Yeah.
Like, Katie, you love minty pale.
I do. When she said mint blue, I was like,
you love them.
Now, the other thing I will say is that once you find it on the color wheel, then instead of calling it mint blue or sage green or things like that, or like honey something, you know, call it by the colors that are making it. So you are literally dropping the names that,
like a Pantone name.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, blush pink or, imperfect silence or something like that. What does that really mean, you know?
I love that. I want imperfect silence.
Imperfect silence. That sounds like minty green.
I think imperfect silence is a beautiful gray blue. Yeah.
See, as opposed to illuminating yellow, which is the color of the year, which is not easy to use.
That color is interesting. Yeah.
So one thing, let's just transition. Okay, so we were talking a little bit about, you know, kind of getting started, choosing your colors, and when they're on a board or if they're on a fabric, they're starting off at this kind of 2D realm. Mm-hmm. And now we're trying to imagine them in a 3D realm, or consider them in a 3D realm. Yes, what jump do we need to make?
So when you have, let's say, your five colors and you've picked a color relationship, which is basically the color scheme. Let's say you are doing split complementary, which is one of the designer's favorites because, you know, because the complementary, as Don had mentioned, these are two colors opposite of each other. And they create the most vibration together, okay? Right. So that's why it's very exciting spaces. But if you go with the colors that are on the opposite, on the next one, so instead of blue and orange, you kind of go blue-green. So that would be more exciting and less obvious to the eye because
and
it's not
so
just...
intense. Maybe not
yes.
so intense.
Yeah. So basically, it's you're splitting that color, the right color that's right across is right on the right hand side, and the left hand side of that complementary color is what you are using instead of the complementary.
Got it.
So it's I feel like it's a secret that you're getting the best of both worlds.
We're publishing this. Everyone's going to know. They're all going to be doing split complements now.
And so for listeners, we will have a color wheel on the website.
It says Dawn. Okay, yes. We'll find a color wheel.
So let's talk about, like, now we have all of these work that we have done. Let's take it into 3D. So there I ask you is, like, what do you want from this color? Do you want to have an immersive experience? Mm. So let's say let's go with the minty blue. And let's say if I really want to have an immersive experience, I will make sure that I maybe put it on the walls. So when I walk in this space, I am going to be seeing it. Now, this is where I will also consider that I don't have a lot of stuff on the walls, so I can actually see the wall color, because some homes have huge gallery walls, a lot of artwork, then the color would be hidden. So I am going to take into consideration how the room is going to be organized and say, okay, if I want an immersive thing, what is the most visible space? Let's say if the person is an art lover, has lots of art on the wall, maybe it's the biggest piece of furniture. Maybe it's the rug. Maybe it's something really bold that will be visible, that my eye will see and register that I am walking into a minty blue space. That's what will give me the immersive experience. Now, you might decide that, oh, I like it, but I like it when I just, my eye kind of, you know.
Something to complement it, maybe. Is that what you were about to say?
No, I was thinking that maybe if you wanted just the color to be like a hit of those colors, like pops of color, everybody says. So maybe in that case, you may want to have grounded maybe in a neutral space, but you might want to add those as accessories. So maybe adding a beautiful glass minty blue vase that is sitting on the window where the light is coming in, and it has maybe coral flowers or white flowers or something like that. So that would be something that will excite your eye. So if that's the expression of that color you want in your home, you go with that kind of route. So there is many different ways of doing it.
Yeah. Now, one thing I want to just kind of put out there, just because I heard you mention it early on, when you were talking about how you might think about putting together a palette, and if you were coaching a class or thinking with a client, you mentioned, you know, selecting five colors for a palette. Mm-hmm. One of the things I talk about a lot in my books, which have to do typically with smaller homes, is actually two patterns that both have to do with limiting your palette, not having such a big range to start with of mm-hmm. options. Because in a small space where you have some open and overlapping spaces that you want to feel larger, you don't want, in my opinion, kind of too many colors making it busy and feeling maybe more broken up. Whereas if there are fewer colors, the rooms are kind of tied better together, and maybe it's a little more seamless to make a small space feel larger. And I think some people are uncomfortable with the thought of fewer colors. Like, you know, it's all about more typically in life.
Yes.
And And yeah. I just want to put in a little, you know, I'm an advocate for the less is often more, and just choosing those colors really carefully. And to your point, which colors do you want to pop? And if you want a color to pop, in my world, that I would put that in a more discreet location, you know, rather than, or maybe in a powder room. But I don't know that I would make the living room, you know, like this big crazy color, certainly in a small space, because then I would feel compelled to either use that a lot so that, you know, I can make it feel more tied together, which I think would be overwhelming and maybe not my cup of tea. And again, this is really personal, isn't it?
Yeah, color choice. Yeah, and this is where I have to interject with something Rena was just touched on, and that's cultural differences.
Yes.
When you choose color, because I mean, I've never been to India. I've been to Asia, but I've never been to India. And I just imagine, and I've seen images of pretty bright colors used
yes.
on walls.
Yes.
And mixes of pinks and oranges and yellows and, you know, colors you would never choose, Katie.
That I wouldn't choose, correct.
You know, but they look so exciting.
Yes. Can I see them at your house, but not mine?
Well, I think there is something to be said about that. I often look at it here, like here, nature, the landscape seems so vibrant. The blue right. skies, my gosh, and the colors are muted. And there, and depending on the different countries, and depending on the location, if the sun is too hot, it's more of a haze, you know. So you have the colors. I did grow up in India, and I've never had a fear of color, maybe because it's just, it's like I never think of it like as a thing.
I know,
you know?
It's totally, so, it is your culture, because America is so beige. Let's face it.
Well, okay, let's not use the word beige. Let's use the word
a lot of beige.
Muted.
Muted.
Yeah.
Beige.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of a designer, Kelly Wurstler, comes to mind, who uses a lot of colors and a lot of patterns. I mean, she is yes. like a master designer of using a lot of colors. And but I also would like to kind of two things that going off of what Katie, you just said, is that people do want color in their life. I mean, you know, especially with the a lot of students who I come across who are enthusiasts, design enthusiasts in the continuing education program, they are attracted to it. They want to do it, but it's like it is kind of you hesitate. It's like, oh my gosh, if I paint all this color, what if I don't like it? And it might be too loud. And sometimes, yeah, it may be too loud, but I think that learning about color, and that's where I feel like as a refresher, designers, architects, stylists, anyone who is wanting color should kind of do this kind of workshops and continue to do it as their creative play, is mix these colors. Because the more you mix them to recreate, let's say, even the lovely yellow, that is the color of the year, if we mix them, we will learn what colors are being combined to get to that. And all of a sudden, all that goes into the DNA of that color is something that can be added on as a expression. So let's say you added, you know, in that case, I've been grounding anything in white is always like that's my trick sure. to do it. Like ground everything in white. I also do, you know.
Now, what do you mean ground everything in white? Clarify.
Like white having walls? No, not necessarily white walls. Let's say you have a very colorful walls. You could have something that's maybe a little bit like a cream or linen color, or maybe a light gray colored sofa in there. All of a sudden, see, the color is like a person speaking very loudly. If you have all five people speaking really loudly in a room, you got a problem, right? So it would be nice to kind of create a hierarchy. So you create a hierarchy. If the color gets a big expression, then everything else, maybe the patterns are a little bit more toned down. Maybe there are other things that are a little bit more toned down. So creating a visual. So when you enter the space, not everything is fighting to get the same amount of attention from your senses, basically.
That's what you were talking about, Katie, to limit the number of colors.
Yes.
But I understand what Rena's saying.
Yeah. And also, I think, you know, two things just to put out there as a common way of thinking about color when you're selecting colors is to think of contrast. Because I'm not saying that you shouldn't have or love color in your home. I'm definitely a color fan. To me, it's just deciding where to put it. You know, where does that color appear? Yeah. And is it, like you said, is it on the walls or is it in the floor tile? Is it in the tile around the fireplace? Is it, you know, any kind of number of places where you can put it? And think about how wherever you're putting it contrasts with, you know, the rest of the environment. And yeah. Also one thing that certainly we'll touch on, I think, more is the impact of daylight on color and how color looks different in different 100%. Amounts of daylight. And, you know, some rooms have more windows than others. And you might think that a color that you chose looks a certain way to your eye. And then once it's applied somewhere where you didn't really in advance kind of anticipate either how washed out it might get because there's so much daylight, or if it's in a darker space,
how it might look.
Yeah. I mean, it totally changes the color. It doesn't, and also the daylight is really important because, I mean, the daylight, the color temperature of the daylight changes throughout the day. So how it's impacting
and
the
seasonally.
Color. Yeah, seasonally too. Yeah. My gosh, I mean, it changes so much for us in the in New England here. And the other thing is also we have a lot of indirect lighting, which is not all the same color temperature. And nowadays with the LED, when they say daylight, even they say that on the lamp, it's still different, you know, the color,
that's right. We didn't talk about color temperature. Do we want to talk about color temperature at all? Do we have a definition of color temperature?
I do not have a definition of color.
This is temperature. Okay. We're going to throw color temperature up onto the website. Because when you think of lighting, that's you made me think of it, Rena. When you think of artificial lighting, the color temperature is so important because it can really ruin a wall color. If you had an anticipated kind of daylight lighting primarily, and someone chooses, it could be an LED, it could be any fixture with a different color temperature, just going and buying those discount bulbs in the grocery store that cast that like blue light.
Oh, yeah.
That blue light that kills me.
I mean, color temperature is something like the light will affect it and the colors itself too. So, I mean, you know, one quick things of like, you know, since we have our color wheel already out, you can, first basic thing is you can divide it into half. I say the colors of fire and the colors of water, cool and warm colors. But every color family has a cool and a warm side. And one trick to kind of, this is always gets confusing, especially in the greens, because what you might think is more warm is actually on the cooler side. Because when one of the trick is when you situate a color on that color wheel and then move it going closer to yellow. So whichever the distance, so let's say you find a color, as it's moving to the yellow, if that part is smaller, then that's closer to, I mean, it's warmer than the other color, which is a little bit further away. Mm. So again,
that is super helpful.
Yeah.
That's very helpful, Rena, because I know that, like, you know, some people I think kind of have it intuitive, and I'm sure Dawn, it becomes intuitive, right? If you've been working in color your whole career, you instantly can look at something and say that's warmer, that's cool.
Absolutely.
That's not necessarily obvious to a homeowner who's putting together a palette.
I'm learning this every day working with clients that just don't get it.
But, but this is a great tool.
You got to be patient.
I do have another trick also on that one, because color, tone to understand the temperature and the undercolor, basically undertone of the color, is very difficult. And it's like, you know, oftentimes people get tripped into like, oh, what is what? That is, again, context. So I always have like one color chip and I say, is this cool or warm? Then I put another one that makes the first one look, oh, this is cooler. And then I add a third one and all of a sudden that looks warmer. So it really is like, you know, going to kind of, you know, get few color chips that are close to each other and you start to see it. Another way you can do it is like on a white background, like, you know, put one of those like basic, like the Manila folders or, you know, folders that we get like in bright primary colors, you know. If you put that yellow down and then you put the color chips on it, I'm telling you, if it has that yellow in it, it seems like it just comes to the surface. You visually see it, right, Don?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You can put a red chip even on a blue envelope or on a red envelope, and that chip looks completely different. You'd swear they were two different color chips, but it's the same color chip.
I now feel like every client needs to get a little packet when we first sign them on, and it would have the color wheel and these folders of different colors. Now, here's a question that I have, just because I haven't thought about it or looked at it enough to come up with a theory. When you're looking at the different paint manufacturers, right, and everyone has kind of their go-to favorite, but of course, you know, I have a number of the Fandex. I'm assuming we all have like paint Fandex. The way that they've arranged the colors in those Fandex, like if you pull out a certain leaf, if you will, there might be four or five colors on that leaf. What is the intended relationship typically, or is it different from each manufacturer? When you look at like the four colors that are on one leaf.
I think my first only, but this is my visual take. It's a good one to actually look into more, would be like, I'm especially thinking of, I think the Benjamin Moore one. Mm-hmm. It's like that there, it goes from tint to like the darkest, like a shade, you know, that's the kind of the first obvious relationship. And it kind of seems to be related in a sense of how the colors would progress if they were placed on the color wheel, actually. But the paint manufacturers, I think there's also another thing that people should know is that it is not that they are mixing it with white. It's not like if you're doing like a color exercise, it's not that. Every paint manufacturer has a different base.
So just as kind of an overall sensibility, and maybe Dawn, you could weigh in or not, these different paint companies, because I think it might be interesting to hear your take, like so Farrow and Ball, Ben Moore. Do you have in your mind an idea of, oh, I want to use X company because their colors tend to be brighter, more subtle, deeper, whatever? Is that, do you have like a shorthand in mind for the different companies or no?
You know what? Certain people go to certain companies because they have a certain kind of vibe in their colors. Like Katie, didn't you use a company called C2?
Yes. I use C2.
Why?
Well, now this is to Rena's point. This isn't an ad for C2.
No, of course
but
not.
But the reason that I use C2 when I can, you know, so I feel like often certain people prefer that you use a different brand that they're more familiar with. But people in New England who might be listening, and I don't think it's just New England, but have access to this paint called C2 paint. I think it might have been developed originally in Providence, actually. Mm. But That's an interesting product for a number of reasons. A, I really enjoy the palette. So I love the color range. But the other thing, and maybe this isn't so innovative anymore, but in the beginning, when you could get C2 paint, their paint samples were not a printed color. In other words, they weren't a translation of the paint color then printed, you know, from a inkjet computer.
Paper.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally the paint is on the card.
All the difference.
That's what I felt. But now maybe other people do that now. And then the other thing is, and this is more common, like say there are six colors you're considering and they're on this little tiny swatch and you don't really want to buy the little pint and go around and paint a bunch of stuff. You can buy the big poster board size sample, which is also painted. Paint. It isn't, pigmented
Katie,
digital.
That is just hitting it on the head. It makes all the difference. You're seeing the actual color, the actual pigment.
Yes. And the way it interacts with light. And, you know, of course, they all have one thing we haven't talked about is, there's so much to talk about.
But I know.
This is finish, you know, right? Sheen.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's like a whole topic in itself. But then that brings it back into the color, the perception, and how the light, it's the finish. It's like, what is the finish of all these materials? You're putting a room together. How do we even take care of, like, think about the texture? Because the light is going to get absorbed. It's highly textured. If it's metallic. That's why that brings us to the other part of this would be like, if you're putting a room together, think of that. Think of the finishes. I also think this is another element to think about, that one of these colors should also be applied as like transparencies. I mean, every room could use a little bit of something natural and could also use something that's a little bit transparent. So So think of like anything that's made out of glass or something crystal. It just adds a little sparkle in the space because the light will hit it at different times in unexpected moments and just adds a little element of being more interactive and more alive.
Can I interject here? I just want to bring us back because I feel like we started something and then left off. I don't want the only paint company we talk about to be C2. Okay. So, Dawn, did you want to share any of your thoughts about some of the paint companies?
You know, when I work with fabrics, but when I'm trying to show clients colors, I often use my Pantone deck, as I'm showing you right here, or I go and get Benjamin Moore Fandex. Because usually the colors are a little more muted, at least the Fandex that I have. And customers, if they're doing a big sofa, they want more toned down color, in my case. So I show them the Benjamin Moore. They select something from there, and then I try to match that color in a digital print. So I tend to go that way. I don't really have Sherwin Williams decks. I just happen to have Benjamin Moore decks in my wardrobe here.
Now, can we say any words about Farrow and Ball? Do either of you have thoughts? Rena, do you want to weigh in?
I adore Farrow and Ball colors.
So talk about that. Tell us why.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, their colors are just delicious because they are very muted. And they do the full range of cuff colors. Some of them are really dark to versus very light. But most of these colors are very grayed down. So so they're a color without being in your face color, you know? So they can almost, it's like, you know, how you have a navy blue pants or jeans that almost turn into a neutral. So, you know, it's like one of those, it's a color, but it's laid back and you can do a lot with it. So you can go for high contrast with it, which if you use the darker colors, if you mix it with white, oh gosh, it's glorious. And or you can use and create a very analogous color palette, which is like, you know, very colorful. But because those colors are muted, they play really well. They seem very more like, you know, they're easy to work with and develop a palette around. And they also don't have thousands of colors.
That's what I was going to say. A lot of it, I think, is the way, you know, there's a whole psychology of choice. And I think that's one of the things that overwhelms people about color is if you look at the color wheel, it's like, oh my God, there's so many colors.
Where do you begin?
But Farrow and Ball is really good at kind of seasonally editing and presenting, like, here are, let's say, four palettes.
Yes.
And they'll name them in something like whatever that great description you had earlier about silence. So they'll give them these kind of esoteric names, but that's just a group of, let's say, four colors that work together, and they aren't necessarily, you know, all in the same related hue, right? So there'll be good contrast. You're right. They tend to be, there's a lot of kind of earthy darks, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And I think for someone who's just starting out thinking about color, it can be a good place to start to kind of look at what Farrow and Ball is seasonally grouping together. Because I don't think they're certainly not obvious choices, but there's a logic to the patterns they put out, and there's not too many.
And they have a great Instagram feed, if I can. I would love to plug that in. It's a visual delight. They put such beautiful colors out. But again, they're not easily available everywhere. You know, you have to buy them through the stockists that sell that, or those they store in the Boston Design Center.
So that's a good point.
Benjamin or designers. So Benjamin Moore is, I would say, I've also worked with a lot more of Benjamin Moore colors, and they have been awesome because they're so easily accessible. They were also very great. Ages ago, I was teaching this workshop and they gave me some discounts to offer to my attendees.
Well, then it paid off.
I thought it was really so nice of them to extend that. And we appreciate companies who want to make it easier to understand their product. So then when you do specify them, it really works out. And they do have, though, I do have the deck of whites and off-whites. And there was some 138 colors or something. So that goes to the thing of like, okay, you want white? Which white are you talking about? You know, there is so
many. That's perfect. That is a great segue because I did want to talk a little bit about, because it seems like a trend that never goes away, and therefore not a trend, is the love of the all white palette, right? And so the white, when you're doing an all white palette, maybe we could just talk about what that means, because there's certainly, you can have difference in texture. We talked a little bit about finish, but there's, let's just talk about the different whites. If someone wants to go that route, and then if you are doing, let's say you're doing your white on white palette, but you want one color, you know, how do you choose that one color?
Oh, I have ideas about
that. Let's hear. Let's hear.
So some of the white, if you're going for an all white space, you have to be very careful to understand that's where the undertone of the color shows up, because you might think you're painting a color, a white room, and all of a sudden it starts to look very pink on the light.
I was going to say pink is the evil pink will come in.
Yes, it shows up. Even on, like, sometimes when you put a little bit of it on, it still doesn't show up. But sometimes it's like it's those colors become, you know, really, and the undertone becomes really important. And the other thing that, as you were mentioning, Katie, when you're working with something that is very kind of neutral on neutral or white on white, you have to add, because the eye want, our eye wants variety. Our eye sees variety of textures and maybe some shades and sheens, patterns, self pattern on pattern, like self patterns. Those things all add variety, so our eyes can see the differences. We like to see that. Otherwise, it will be like a white room. It's like, you know,
like an insane asylum.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You're not going for that.
No.
Yeah.
No, I agree, because I think we naturally defer to hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of naturally also want to understand down and up, you know, floor and ceiling.
Yeah.
So maybe we could chat a little bit about ceiling, because ceiling color is kind of the place where people seem to lose all confidence. What? How do you feel about ceiling color?
Again, you're asking the color lover here, so I'm definitely not going to say color. But I do, I have seen some examples where people have added a little bit of, like, maybe some kind of a, like, it's a little, it's not as flat, but a little bit of sheen. But again, it's in context, which space it is. If it is a hallway leading to your pool deck, maybe there could be a little reflective something into the ceiling. So as you are walking through, the light is flickering and you're thinking of the flickering water on the pool outside. So so that could be some places where you could do that. But in most, because of the ceiling height, if you have tall ceilings, then go for it. But if it is your standard, you know, up to like 9 foot, it's difficult to put any color up there. But what you could do is maybe add an accent of a crown molding, which can finish off if you are in, if you want to do something that's close to the ceiling.
So some New England kind of standards are, as I'm sure you're probably familiar, if you're on someone's porch, it is a New England tradition to paint the ceiling of the porch in one of those blues or those greens that I love. And now, granted, you're outside, you know, in other words, yes, there's something overhead, but you have open air around you. So this blue thing that's overhead isn't controlling all the light around you by reflecting off walls, because there aren't walls on a porch.
It probably also gives you a sense of shelter because you're outside. So you feel like there is a sense of shelter.
Well, that's why people do it. It's actually supposed to be kind of reminding you of the sky.
Of the sky. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But you rarely see people bring that inside. You know, I see that outside. I know, Dawn, the project that you and I worked on together in Wenham, where you did a lot of the textiles in that greeny color that I love. You might, I don't know if you remember, but we put a little tone of green in the ceiling. Yes.
Yes.
So the ceiling is.
I was just going to ask, can't you continue the wall color up on the ceiling?
Right. So what we did is we took the wall color and we added a ton of white to it. And so the color already was muted.
Yeah.
And it was a slight, slight. And then we added all this white to it, but there was still this tiny touch of green in the ceiling.
So pretty.
And when we had the photo shoot for that project not long ago, the photographer was checking all of his colors, right? So for a photographer, it's really important that you capture the colors, you know, appropriately.
True. Yeah.
And he was like, he couldn't figure out. He's like, I can't get the ceiling white. We're like, really? We're like, that's because the ceiling isn't white. But It's just because it does.
Everyone.
I mean, you have to be careful because if you say you have a green ceiling, that sounds awful. Like you don't want everyone reflecting green light. They'll look sallow and sickly. So, I mean, this was very, 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 very minimal. I mean, less than a hint, but a slight, slight bit of color. I wonder just before we go, because I think we're running out of time.
Oh, darn. I wanted to ask Rina one quick question.
Okay, go for it. Ask
in
your question.
One of our original chats, Rina mentioned, in terms of architecture, an architect named Legoretta.
Yeah,
and I
mentioned
him because I'd never heard of him, but I looked him up. The colors he uses in his architecture are wild. I was shocked.
Now, he's an architect from Mexico. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So there's bright terracottas and blues and, oh my gosh, beautiful.
Well, I think that's a good reflection of kind of what you were talking about, Rain, in the beginning, about regional and cultural
context,
ideas of color.
Color in context.
Yeah.
Color has
to
be in context. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. But at the same time, I really would encourage everyone, if your heart says, ooh, I would love to try that. Try it. You know, go with that. Make a color palette with five paint chips. Place it on the, find it in the color wheel, and then find out. Now, when I say find five paint chips, I don't mean all five colors. If you are not a very heavy into color, I can promise you, you're putting a lot of neutrals with it because it's you who is putting colors that are going together that are kind of, so it will be close to what you are. What your natural tendencies are anyways, it will just be. And with the colors, I say, you have to think about walls, floors, ceiling, furniture, and accent.
Yes.
Pick where those things will go.
Is there anything, I think, Rina, you've given us some good kind of, I feel like we got some little good nuggets of rules of thumb already, but maybe just before we all hang up, people always love kind of a rule of thumb of something like what to never do with color or what to always do with color or any kind of thing when you're thinking about color, like don't ever put this color in a bathroom or always put this color in a bathroom or any kind of, do either of you have any thoughts about like a rule of thumb?
Before Rina finishes up, I just want to say, I remember my textile design professor, she was like wovens professor. She said, there are no ugly colors, just poor combinations.
Ah.
So, you know, think about what your colors are using next to each other and try not to make something too garish. If you're weaving fabric, perhaps. Unless you tend toward garish.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, you know. My advice would be just to kind of think of the volume, especially when you're thinking in terms of your home and your room. Think of the volume of the space that you have and the amount of color, you know, expressions you're going to make in that. So again, it's like every color is speaking with a loud voice. How many are you adding? Do you have enough space? If it's a tight and a smaller space, you probably want to think of like, you know, like maybe having fewer voices in there. I always love these images that kind of, you know, keep me on the straight and narrow. And polychromatic color palette, that can be a little much, which is like pretty much you're putting every color that you want in a space, and again that in relationship to the volume of the space, that one I would say would be could be difficult to pull off.
It would.
Yes.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do this again because
yes, totally.
The subject has so many ramifications and
absolutely. Yeah. No, my rule of thumb would just be edit, and beware of pink. I mean, because I have definitely, as it comes up in an undertone, you know, so you're not choosing a pink color, but pink will rear its head unexpectedly and the horror of it, the horror.
Oh my.
So this was so much fun. And I think you're right. We probably do need a part two. We can figure out later on for another part two. But it was super fun chatting with you, Rina, about color. Thank you so much.
I hope our listeners get some real good information here.
We'll augment it with some info on the website. Don't forget, we're at designmeahouse.com. Please take a look. Send us an email if you have suggestions or comments. And if you're listening to the podcast and you've been enjoying it, you know, we hope we'll share it with your friends and family and spread the word.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Rina.
Thank you.
That was a pleasure.
Thank you, Katie. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.